Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So I'd like to say a little bit about what you might call the magic of the practice, a magical side of Buddhism, what magic is even, or psychic ability. Maybe I hesitate to even say that, as people know so little about this. They have a very strange idea of what this is all about. I could find it quite frightening even. So I wish there were different words. There aren't really many words in English for these kinds of things. I wish there was a different word that I could use. But we'll have to go with that. With all this. When I was a kid, I just associate this with kind of weird people in fairgrounds, or con men really in fairgrounds. It was all a bit, it was seemed rather silly and just these weird things happening. That what use are they? But actually, this can be a very beautiful part of practice, and often one that we have to be very careful how we talk about it or who we talk to about it. Very careful that it doesn't go to our heads. As Westerners, this is difficult. A lot of things would tend to go to our heads, and this one in particular. You start to hear stories about these kinds of things, it can just go straight to your head. That's not where it needs to be. These are affairs of the heart, not affairs of the head. Often when we start to withdraw the mind from the senses, we enter into a kind of private little world of our own a bit more. And if we begin to use the imagination in meditation, we can improve our imagination, which is a nice thing to do. Visualize things or go to a nice place in our imagination. But this isn't what we would call a psychic ability. This is but to distinguish between the use of the imagination or the imagination itself and a psychic ability is not an easy thing to do. So the way really it is as an idea or a theory, but the experience or the set of experiences that happen are unmistakable, and the experiences, psychic experiences themselves, are a completely different nature to imagination. Imagination, we're doing something, creating something with the mind, whereas a psychic ability, these things are all arise spontaneously. But this is not actually the way that we make a distinction. What the teachers will say is that if you've experienced a moment of absorption samadhi, in other words, your mind has withdrawn from all the things of the senses and become extremely bright, all things of the senses disappeared for a period of time. So if that's happened to you and that's been a stable state, and you can describe this to a teacher, and you can go and say, you describe how it was, and the teacher can see, yes, you're looking very bright, and yes, and this has happened to you, and this is what opens up this possibility, because the mind has managed to let go of its attachment to the senses. So the mind is normally attached to the senses. If the mind can open up, not grasp onto the senses, then and that's like another set of eyes opens, when I sort of a different light is shining on the world, and this new light can shine on things it's never seen before, which other people with a similar kind of meditation will also see incidentally. So this is another way in which you can see how you'd have a genuine ability is if you're with somebody else who can see certain things, you see the same thing together, then you can be, you're in no doubt as to what you experienced constituted, that it wasn't a movement of the imagination, but that you'd seen something real, something that has an existence other than that in your own mind. The great great therapist Carl Jung, who's a wonderful man in my eyes and a tremendous groundbreaker in terms of psychology and psychotherapy, towards the end of his life he began to think he got it wrong, what he'd come up with is the idea of the collective unconscious, where all these kinds of phenomenon are seen as creations of the mind, not just personal creations of the mind, but creations of the mind generally, collective unconscious. But he came to later in life, I'm not quite sure what happened to him, but he began to realise that he couldn't hold up this distinction. I mean, maybe he'll hold up his theory. He couldn't hold up the distinction between what was in imagination and what had some other kind of existence other than in his imagination. He'd worked very long and hard at dreams and imagination, developing his imagination. Anyway, perhaps, you know, as just shooting the breeze with someone the other day and thinking, well, perhaps the reason why his whole theory fell apart for him late in life is that, you know, Deva walked into his where he was living, and sat down and started talking to him, which is something, the kind of thing that could happen. Somebody's developed their minds very, very strongly, it's the kind of thing that could happen. And of course, to say that all these experiences are merely imagined would just fall apart, wouldn't it? You'd realise, well, this is a different order of experience altogether. You're just not in my imagination at all, would be perfectly clear to you if it happened to you. And this is the nature of it. If somebody is doubting their experience, was this my imagination or was this something else, then it can't be a psychic experience. Because if they have a psychic experience of some kind, then it's not questionable on that level. It's just a different order of experience. If you have a vision, something just arising arising spontaneously in the mind, like a religious vision, these kinds of things can happen. It can be very beautiful and transform people's lives. If something like that happens, then you know perfectly well for yourself that wasn't your imagination. Yeah, the unfortunate thing is that people will try quite hard to pass off their imagination as something special, which can then become this can become very dangerous, very deluding. So if any of these experiences as well, if they arise and they're not, if the reality is distorted in any way by these experiences, or you feel fear or anything of this sort, our mind's not stable enough to be there. Our mind will really naturally withdraw from this kind of state if fear arises for some reason. So in all these areas, it's very important to find a teacher who can guide us. Really invaluable. This is one of the main functions that a forest monk will will perform in Thailand is to be a guide through this whole realm. It's quite easy to get lost in this realm because of the compelling nature of the imagination, and I wish for that to be something more special. This is the really dangerous one. Yes, this is sad because the imagination can be such a beautiful, fertile thing. It can take us to very wholesome states, but it can also delude us. So we have to make sure that all these practices are very careful, very much within a Buddhist practice as a whole. That our virtue, sila, is very well established. Our mind is clear, and then we have to be very careful how we talk about these things and who we talk about them to. Very careful that we don't start to boast of our experience. We talk about it in general terms, in confidence, to the right people for the right reasons, so that we don't then get carried away with our experience in one way or another and become inflated by it or deluded by it. And particularly to talk about psychic power, this is a very unfortunate term, psychic power. There's a power to these things. There certainly is in some ways, but this is a whole realm of its own, this realm. So if we enter into this, then yes, there are bright forces and there are dark forces, but our mind is to be pretty bright to enter into this realm in the first place. So we're entering into it as a Buddhist practitioner, then we'll be entering into this whole world with a bright mind, or we'll be a white witch, so or wizard, so to speak. And it's our goodness and our patience and our humility that protect us, that we develop some impressive qualities of mind, that we're not identifying with these and see them as ourselves. We see them as the fruits of the practice. Why often a skillful way to think of these things is to think of these abilities as coming from somewhere else or someone else. So Reiki as channeling an energy from heaven, rather than channeling our own, because otherwise we can just become inflated by this thing. Which is the truth doesn't really matter, actually. So the Buddhist terms are, the yardstick is always, if it's wholesome, beautiful, going towards the good, then we cultivate it, whether we see it as inside of ourselves or outside of ourselves, doesn't matter. Whichever is better. Often to see these things as outside of ourselves is better, clearer and more beautiful. It doesn't really matter, we don't need to get caught up on this or wonder which is the case. Well, these beings that may come to us, are they in our minds or are they not in our minds? We don't really need to know that either. We need to be clear of what we're creating in the moment, and how and whether we're creating in a skillful or wholesome way or not. Keep an eye on our intentions. And then these things don't disturb reality. They exist in addition to a clear view of reality. So they're not frightening in any way, or strange in any way, or special really in any way. So these abilities can actually be very useful. You put them to the good. And this is probably the most difficult area to keep getting it right, not to get lost in one of the most difficult areas particularly without a teacher. I mean, if with a teacher or within a culture that understands these kinds of things, then you're much safer in an isolated situation. If you start to experience these kinds of phenomenon, then I really would recommend that you look for someone to advise you. You find out what's what in these experiences. So I offer that for your reflection.